Reichman University.
Beyond the Uniform. Stories of strength, resilience, and rising to the occasion. With Rachel Safty and Rachel Escandri.
Hey, it's Rachel Safty.
And Rachel Escandri.
And welcome to the Beyond the Uniform podcast on Audioversity, where we tell you the untold stories of the heroes of Israel.
Today we're joined by a truly special guest, a former career military officer who, after years of service, was once again called to serve more than years in reserves during the October 7th war.
He's not only a veteran lieutenant colonel in the IDF, but also a dedicated father and business owner who had to abruptly put his life on hold, balancing the immense demands of military duty, family, and rebuilding a business in the midst of national crisis. Rafi, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, too.
So let's start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your early life. What drew you to a career in the military?
I was born in Jerusalem, raised in Jerusalem as a kid. I don't know how to say it.
A regular
Israeli kid. What drew me to the career when I was 18, I wanted to go to the to the army. I didn't know where to go. So my brother, he was in the army, he told me, don't be an infantry, go to something else. So somehow it drew me to the logistic forces. But I do an infantry training. Yeah, thank you.
Like combat.
And then I go to the logistics, and I became a logistics officer. At first I thought I will be out after 4 years, but then I saw I'm good at it. First of all, I was in the Nahal.
The
first brigade. 5 years I was in the Nahal, and after 5 years, I go to the intelligence forces. So I start my career in the intelligence forces as a logistics officer, and then all the years I was in several units there, including Shmone Matayim, that everyone know, as a logistics officer. And I served for 25 years. And got out for retiring in 2012.
So you finished your whole life until 2012 was
only in
army,
the army
military,
yeah.
Wow. Focused.
Yeah.
And you were raising a family at this point also.
Yeah, of course. I have four. I'm 56 now. I have four kids. One of them is learning here. The young one.
One of them is a student with us in her degree.
Sagi is a student here. It was very tough. Period because my wife was alone. 13 years I was in the field, and just the other 12 years I was a little bit more in a home.
Being in the field, you mean like you wouldn't come home all day?
Yeah,
you would stay on
only weekends.
Yes.
Oh wow.
It was very. I think my wife, she's the hero. No, because to raise.
Should have her on as well.
Yeah, because to raise for kids, it's a very tough thing. But we made it. You know, we didn't think about it. We just do that.
Yeah.
So it was a very 25 years, very good. A lot of ups and downs, like every career. But I'm really, it was a great time for me, and it was a great time to retire. So,
of course. And then you started a business right after?
Yeah, almost. I go to Nepal for after military trip for 1 month.
Was this a family trip or a solo trip?
No, alone. It was alone. I tracked there, and it was
wow.
Very.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I came back and I opened a business. First, I didn't know how to do the business because in the army they don't teach us to do business, but it was okay. I'm a coacher, so I learned to be a coacher. I learned to be a financial planner. So that was my business for families. Mm-hmm. And I started to do that. And in the time, in the last 15 years, I'm doing coaching for businesses, coaching for families, investing companies in the United States, and other great things.
What got you into investing in the United States? Like, where was the branching into
that's a story, because Sagi has a sister. She's a special kid sister. She's 25 here. And my thoughts and my wife's thought was, what will happen after we go, after we die? So we start to think economically how to do that. And we understand that we need to invest in order to have
a guaranteed future
for her, a financial freedom for her. So this is one of my goals.
Wow.
And in time, I develop it for other families too. So if there are any special kids, families who need help, and I do that voluntarily, I help them to do the same thing for their kids. So that's wow. one of the things, and that's why I go to the United States, because in Israel, the business in real estate is a little bit different, and in the United States, it's a little bit flexible.
So you basically got into this business with the higher goal of helping your daughter, who's special.
Yeah, of course. This is our kids is our higher goal.
It's
we did our career, and we also make another career now. But at the end, we want to give them the financial channel and the means to go on.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So how did everything change? How is your life affected on October 7th by this war? You know.
Well, first of all, as any other citizen, also I have a family that lives in Nachal Oz.
Nachal Oz is one of the towns that was in the south that was impacted.
Kibbutz.
Yeah.
It's Kibbutz Nachal Oz. There was a disaster there also. Fortunately, my family didn't hurt physically. So in the night of between the 7th and the 8th, I go to take them, not from there, but they took them out, and
you went to rescue
them.
Not
to rescue, just
to pick
them up. Someone else rescued them. I just picked them out to our house. They stayed on our house for a week and a half, and then they go to other places. And in the meantime, I called to my unit to see if they need something. At first, they told me, no, we don't need anything.
Right, because at the time, basically everyone that had completed a military service was getting called to reserves duty.
Yeah, yeah. I did a reserve after I retired for 3 or 4 years, and then I retired even from the reserves.
Okay. So you're a veteran. You were already...
Totally veteran.
Totally veteran, totally done with the army. Yeah. You didn't expect to be going back to reserves.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm an Israeli, and I'm in the state of Israel, and I'm, after all, I'm a soldier.
Yeah.
So I called the unit. They told me no, but after 2 weeks, they called me back, and they said, Rafi, this is your specialty, your logistics. We're developing a new unit, a new intelligence unit, and we want your help to get it. So I came after 2 weeks on the 21 October and put my uniform and go for 8 months fluently.
Wow. And can you tell us a little bit about what this unit was that you guys rebuilt?
I will try to say it in English. Maybe you will help me.
Of course.
This is a unit that keep the, how do I say, shalal? In the world, there is a lot of stuff that...
I want to say evidence, maybe?
And it's become an evidence. Mm-hmm. It's become an evidence.
Everything that basically the Hamas members, Hamas terrorists, came wearing on them or with them. From phones to maps to papers.
Exactly.
That were on them.
Also weapons.
But
the weapons are not in our unit. We take the things that are good for the intelligence, the intel. So it's phones, computers, papers, and maps and stuff like that. And we need. There wasn't any unit like that. She was shut down 6 years before, and we need to start it from all over again. And that's what we did. And all this stuff in very short time, we saw that it's help for the army. We actually save life in that work, and we're still doing that. The unit's still doing that. I retired again, but I see what they do. And if they will need me again, I will come. But I hope not.
Wow, this is insane. So you're able to take evidence from things that, you know, we saw thousands and thousands of Hamas terrorists coming in on October 7th, and they brought these things with them, and so you're able to develop intelligence from the things that you found on their bodies.
First of all, the things that we found on them, and when the army came into Gaza, and other things. There's things that I can't talk about, but common sense.
Right, you can imagine what these things might be.
And we revealed that a lot of things that we didn't know.
Can you give us an example of what? Yeah. Whatever you're able to tell us.
See, there was a conception that everything will be on air in cyber or others, but there was platform that was very old and they still use that, like papers. We can't read a paper if we don't see it. And there was a lot of plans that were on this in papers.
Kind of like old fashioned.
Also, they used, how do I say it?
Walkie talkies?
Like walkie talkie, yeah. So things that we didn't think they will use. And after we saw that, we understand that we need to deal with this stuff too.
So, for example, the GoPro cameras, which became very infamous after October 7th because he basically recorded their massacre, was that part of, you know, was your unit responsible for watching over that footage, for example, and taking evidence from that?
Yes and no, because we just take the first material, but the other material, other units do, and I can speak about that, but we only the basics. We start to,
as you guys are like the first step.
Only what you see in the news. Okay.
So you basically stopped your business to do that, right? For 8 months straight since October 21st?
Almost a year, it's 8 months, and after that another days and another year, one and a half months.
So 1 year of stopping your life, pausing your life, and how was that? How could you stop your business?
Fortunately, I'm okay in my economic situation, my financial situation, so I can deal that. But there was another things because I started a new business, so it was 1 year, so it wasn't really go on. It was a little bit.
It was new.
It's a bit easier in that, but a lot of connection. I needed to reconnect again. I needed to start again. Almost everything. But people helps. People help. The Israeli helps.
The Israeli people are some.
Yeah.
Wow, amazing. I see. Out of the things that you're able to tell us about, you mentioned how you save lives. I also read a little bit about your unit. I actually saw a video that the terrorists had from the technology that you guys were able to take. that they were hiding booby traps and different form of weaponry within Gaza, and that your unit had access to that, and then you were able to, through your intelligence, understand exactly where it was in Gaza to be able to warn soldiers on the ground.
Exactly. That was in the news.
That was in the news.
Okay. You're like, can I confirm this?
But yes, exactly like that. It's start with the field when we save life like that, and it's end in the UN, because there is a lot of material that talk about the strategy and a lot of things that what we
like
call
their strategy.
An influence stuff. So it's go all the way. If you see the Israeli president have on his hand a book of the Mein Kampf in Arabic.
Yeah.
That's one thing that came through us also.
Wow.
And other things like that.
That you find, yeah, in schools even.
In
schools,
Gaza. Yeah.
In their kindergartens. It's insane how every school, kindergarten, residential area, it's a Hamas operation center.
I think there will be a lot of work in the upcoming years into the intel to pull out everything. It's a lot of things.
A lot of things that you'd say are similar to, like you gave the example of Mein Kampf in Arabic. What are these things that...
It's also because it's tons of gigabytes, or I don't know how to say it.
Gigabytes.
No, I know, but bigger than that, of data that we had.
That you have to.
We need to. It's like to pull a needle from
a
haystack, like that.
Wow.
This is the real work. There's a lot of work for the intel, and we're still ongoing because we have another arena, do you say, or?
And you mean Hezbollah? You mean
Syria, Hezbollah.
So you do
all
same
of the
thing
different
the different terror proxies that are constantly trying to kill us.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's not just it started again. This unit was kind of reborn due to October 7th and the war in Gaza, but it's also in the north.
She was reborn due to Gaza, but she's go a little, a lot more technologic, because the technology did the work. What in the past wasn't there. It was only papers.
And now it's like a permanent unit again of the army.
I don't know how to say about it.
Well, it's definitely still needed.
Of course.
For now, yes. I don't know.
You spoke to us also very briefly before about how almost 90% of your unit was reservists. Can you?
90%.
Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about what it is like building a unit again from scratch that is people that are civilians before the 7th or before they get called back?
First of all, at first it's a little bit, it's not hard at first, because all of them wanted to come, and all of them was, you know, with a target, want to help. The challenge is after 4 months, when people will start to a little bit tired and have their homes and need to go to their homes. So you need to do a lot of leadership work. All the officers need to work with and to talk with the people and the other reserve forces to stay there. And this is the challenge, if you ask me. And logistic for me it's easy, because I know what to do, but the main challenge is people to reserve the people that will stay. So we started to give the vacation a little bit, others and other things,
because different than regular soldiers, it's people like you who have families, who have jobs, who have their normal lives. They can't just put everything on
bills
pause.
But they put the people and the some. I have some friends that almost from the first day still there. They choose that life again. It's like to be.
Well, that's what you did for a year.
You
pause your life for a year to serve the country again at 56 years old. You don't even need to anymore, right?
But it's a decision you make in yourself. I didn't know how much time it will go on. After 8 months, I saw that I can a little bit release. I build my unit,
the foundation.
The foundation, so I can go a little bit. I come back when they needed me and then go out.
You mentioned that your daughter with special needs was living with other special needs children.
Yeah.
During that time. How is
it's still now? It's not because of the war. It was
a program beforehand.
Yes, it was war, but it started in October, in 2 weeks after the war.
Wow!
So the war started. So it was more also challenging because the situation, but it was okay at the end.
Yeah, I wanted to ask how was the mental toll of having to handle your family, your business, your daughter, your everything. You're now in reserves for a year. How did you deal with that?
I don't know how to answer that, because it's kind of natural for me. If I think about it, first of all, I'm not alone. I have a wife. We work together. Also, she has a challenging work with of her own. She's school. I don't say Menahel Bet Sefer.
She's a principal.
Yeah, she's a principal
in a school
for 600 kids.
Oh wow!
It's a big one.
Wow!
She needed to deal with it. First of all, in the Corona, and then after in the war, so she has her challenges too. But when you work together and the kids were pretty big, and the only challenge was Gal. She was the big challenge.
Your daughter?
So yeah, my daughter, Sagi sisters. So we take what we're doing, and almost every day we talk each other. We see what we need to do for tomorrow. We plan the day. We took a lot of air. We work with their house, the social worker in the house. Mm-hmm. We all talk together when it needed. Sagi helped a lot, so we do that.
A team effort.
Yeah, it's totally a team effort. I didn't think about it until you asked, but yes, this is what it is.
Yeah, because it's. I find it so beautiful how Israelis, people like you, take things as obvious, muvan me'elav, it's of course I'm gonna go, pause my life and fight for my country and develop a whole new unit to save lives, and it's you're talking about it as if it's obvious. Of course I would have gone and done it, but life completely changed. And life was positive. Do you feel like life today is very different from what it was before the war?
As in Israel or
for you?
For you. Kind of, yes, because it's a little bit urge things. You think, okay, what can happen? What will happen? What do I need to do for my kids? What do I need to do for my business? How do I need to build my business if something like that will happen again? What to do? So I'm do that with I work with another teams. So if I won't be there, that's exactly what happened when I was in the second. And the second time I go, first it was 8 months. After that, it was 1 month and a half. And the other wave of reserve. Yeah, and the other wave. My partners, my partners work together. We was in the United States in July, so we start to work together. And when I was in the. And the reserve.
So you learn to prepare now to set up a specific foundation for your business, so that you're able to, in case something happens again and you would need to go back.
Yeah, exactly. And the main thing is to work together with teams that can hold the business. So I'm not the business is not with me, not dependent on me.
Dependent fully on you.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry for my English. It's not Saki's English.
Are you working on reopening the coaching business again?
I reopened it.
So how has that been since the war?
So I'm now, in these days, there's a new game called Projo. So it's a game, it's a board game based on real estate and entrepreneur. And I'm one of the master game, one of the coaches of this game. And I'm going with this game for organizations or the people on crews that want to play it, and through the playing they learn about entrepreneur partnerships and the coaching for the business. So this is, I really like the things.
What's the target audience for this? It's a physical board game?
It's a physical board game. The target audience is, first of all, organization, how I said, right?
Companies.
Yes. Companies, organizations, and people that wants to learn about real estate too, because it's real estate based, but it's business based. It teach business, entrepreneur, partnerships, so people that want a little bit about real estate or a little or work with their staff and that combine the staff. It's kind of synergy game. It makes the crews work more synergetically, I'd say, right?
It kind of makes like work on team
building. Yeah, yes. You know what synergy is? The word synergy, sinergia.
Synergy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
So the people that work together have become more tight, more synergy in the work. It's a great game.
You'll have to bring it for us next time.
It will come here because I'm one of your students want to open a club, real estate, a club for not Israel, abroad, USA club, real estate, and I will bring it here. I'm helping her.
For like a Reichman University club.
Yeah.
Is the game in English or Hebrew? English, right?
The game in Hebrew, but it's we can do it in English too because,
the cards.
It's in Hebrew. The cards. But I think it's a good question.
I will ask.
Maybe you can make an English and a Hebrew
version. Our great goal, our vision is 10,000. Yes, 10,000 coaches, manchim, how do you say manchim, trainers, for the game. So 10,000 is United States too, and other countries. So it will be in English.
Amazing. Is there anything that you applied from your past year and your experience since October 7th that you applied into your business now? Like, did something change from what you wanted to do the coaching business before the war to now that you reopened it? Do you think you brought things that you learned?
I think the most things that influenced me, first of all, what happened. So I will tell you like that. I told to myself after the eight first months, wow, I can do that. I can. I wasn't alone, of course, and I had a commander on me. I am the logistic officer, but wow, I could bring up this unit. So if I can do that in the army, I can do that more
in your civilian life.
So yes, I took that from there. It helped me a lot, I think, especially in my mental thinking and in my confidence.
That's actually really interesting.
Yeah.
That's something that you experience in the army.
Yeah, it's even because I was not in the army for 8 years about 12 is, but for 4 years I was in the reserve. I forgot things that the army built on in me, and the war and the situation
reminded you,
and even more.
It's really funny that you mentioned this, because I think I've spoken to like many Israelis that even if they just completed a regular service, that they say, oh, I did this in the army, like I can do whatever, no big deal after what I already completed, especially now in the war. Like, so many soldiers are fighting in Gaza and Lebanon, and they're like, what's something after fighting, after to losing friends, after being physically in arms? Like, what's doing some kind of like university work after that, you know?
Yeah.
It's everything.
So I think it's a mentality thing, like, yeah. Perspective.
Yeah, it's perspective and mentality. That's why if you ask me about my family, and I don't know. It's for me, it's regular. For me, it's our life here.
Yeah.
When I come to United States, first of all, it's quiet there. You don't hear all the noise. In Israel, there's always noise. You just when you go out, you understand that.
Of course.
And the pace is, it's not our pace. It's a very
definitely.
Yeah.
Speaking of your children, what do you want your children to take from this experience, from what you did in the past year, or the past year and a half?
Wow. To take care of each other, to help each other, to help. My last name is Obergut. Obergut, it's more than good. Okay? I want them to be like their name. And I want them, and another thing I want to take, resilience. Because I think if this is the word that I needed to use, a resilient, we develop resilience, and I think that's the one of the main things that one needs in his life. If he's resilient, he can go through everything.
And I think that resilience defines the Israeli people.
Yeah,
definitely.
After everything we've gone through.
So. I want them to be good people, contribute to the society, yeah, and to be resilient, and that's even Gal. I'm teaching her that, because in her case it's a little bit different. It's a little bit slower.
Of course. So we have one last question that we always ask our guests. A lot of people in the world, a lot of people that are listening to the podcast, only hear about Israelis from the media. And a lot of times it's not necessarily a right way to portray...
A positive
way to portray the people we are. So if there's anything you could say to the people listening right now, any message that you have for the world, what would it be?
Well,
yeah, it's a hard one. Yeah. It's a big one.
Yeah, I think I will take it from my how do you say motto in English? Motto.
My motto.
Motto.
My
motto. Motto. Yeah.
Because there's saying in the Chazal, "Heve dan kol ha'adam lekaf zchut." I don't know how to say it in English. It means that you think a little bit of the other people before you do something, and we need, from my point of view, to adopt that. We need to wait a little bit, hear the other side, talk each other. I mean, first of all, in our communities, and then
to
out
the
of the world. Yeah.
If we think of the other.
Yeah, if we will just talk and hear other, I think the peace will come sooner, because as you said in the media, everyone take his side and want to make it a big story so everyone will listen to him, but most of the people wants to be a little bit
for peace.
Yeah,
we just want peace,
and we need to protect ourselves, and if someone come to kill us, we need to kill him, that's for sure. But we need to speak first of all each other's, that's my motto, and that's the thing.
How do you say that? To give
like the benefit of the doubt, maybe. I think it might be
yeah
give the benefit of the doubt.
I can send you later the proper one.
The translation.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you too. It was a pleasure for me. Yeah, I like the Reichman place.
It's a great university.
Yeah, it's a great university.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening to the Beyond the Uniform podcast on Audioversity. I'm Rachel Escondri.
And I'm Rachel Safty, and we'll see you here next time with another untold story.
Beyond the Uniform. Stories of strength, resilience, and rising to the occasion. With Rachel Safty and Rachel Escondri.